Do you know what some bread in my office said today? I'm not making this up.
Do me.
And completely out of the blue, apropos of nothing, she just pops up and takes her headphones off and just goes, do you know, I've never slept in a sleeping bag.
What?
That's class.
And I just sort of went, pardon?
Yeah. That's like a girl at my work. She went, I don't like numbers. I prefer words. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. We're back with another one, and we're minus Pete tonight. He's not with us, but don't worry, because James or Jim is here.
Hello.
And the illustrious Luke Moore.
Here.
I meant to say, all right.
I went back to a strange fantasy.
We're going
back to the old school, isn't it? Yeah. Here.
You sounded depressed.
Yeah, I was a little bit, yeah. Sorry about that, yeah, all right.
But don't call me sir.
Okay.
When the mics are on. What is your favourite footballing advert? And it doesn't have to be a particular. It doesn't have to be like a Nike or an Adidas. It can be.
I've got four words for you.
Go on.
Eric Cantona, au revoir.
Yeah.
With the collar.
Or when, like, they're playing it like hell or something.
He puts the flaming ball for the devil's stomach.
The one was good, but I thought it was a load of
tut.
I actually think that recent Nike one was really good, where it was from the player's perspective. That really nailed.
Directed by Guy Ritchie.
Really?
Directed by Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, that makes sense now.
That's brilliant. That used
really
CGI so well.
I quite like the ones, I think it was World Cup 98 when they're all playing on the beach. Remember that? Yeah, like Ronaldo and Luis Enrique. And
was that the Olay?
Was that not a Pepsi one? Was that a Nike one?
No, it was Nike.
No, yeah,
they were just playing on the beach.
Oh, I can remember a classic one. Might have been World Cup 94 when they were all on the side of big buildings and they had to kick the ball across oceans.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
and George
yeah.
Campos made the same. Yeah, that was an awesome one.
That was good. And then the Brazilian players in the airport.
Oh, that's very good.
That
was 98, wasn't it? Was that 02?
I think it was 98.
Right.
There's quite a few, isn't there?
I know why you've brought this up, though.
Why is that?
You've watched that video that got sent around, didn't you? Yeah.
Oh, he said, yeah, you must have done.
The American FIFA.
Was that American? I thought it was like Mexican or something.
No, well, it's been on. I got it from a guy who lives in America that sent it to me. And it's basically, it's just footage from the game and a fat kid going, goal! Goal!
For 45 seconds.
For ages. Absolutely
that's
ages.
It's for FIFA 09, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it Pro Evo?
It's FIFA. We'll put a link up to it, because the guy in the advert is getting absolutely slated in the YouTube comments.
Yeah.
And he's logged onto it and he's like bitterly defending himself, like as an actor.
Because that was his big moment. But to be fair to him, that was his big moment.
Yeah,
like,
well,
I can't believe I'm going to be in a FIFA video.
From looking at him, though, probably had a lot of big moments. Pretty much classic. Every moment he's involved in.
That's classic. But there have been some good football adverts.
Do you know, actually, there was a McDonald's one which David Platt was in. And he was, I think his car had broken down, he was stranded, and like some Sunday league side picked him up, or some non-league side, or whatever it were. And the guy had a McDonald's with him, and Platt was like, oh God, let's have that.
Yeah.
Let's have your Big Mac, or whatever. And he's like, well, you know, couldn't do us a favour on Sunday morning, could you?
Well, it's the food of professional athletes, it's completely feasible. Completely feasible.
He turns up, David Platt plays for them.
I do remember that vaguely, but I'll tell you what that's reminded me of. The one with the Carlsberg, probably the best football team in the world.
Good.
But best pub team in the world.
Yeah.
And it's Charlton, and it's, I almost said more then. It's not more. It's Charlton, it's Beardsley, it's Waddle.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
And Stuart Pearce was a pink shirt.
He was a manager, Bobby Robson.
Bobby Robson thought that was an actual team, though, didn't he?
You can't say that. The man's a national institution.
Sorry.
But Pearce is involved, isn't he? Stuart Pearce is
involved. Do you remember the McDonald's one with Scott Parker in it?
He's ready, Jimmy.
Oh, he's about 13,
yeah.
Isn't he? Yeah, I remember that one. He did keep you up. He's pretty decent. Yeah.
Everyone thought he was going to be like this really skillful player, and he's just like this sort of midfield workhorse.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, because I can remember it was actually it's a guy I met in like a pub or something. I think it was a mate of yours, and he said that he played for Tottenham when he was young, real young, and he said that Sol Campbell was in the same. Sort of training or sort of youth team. He said he was like the most skillful bloke he's ever seen.
Sol Campbell.
Yeah, but it's Sol Campbell. Do you know what I mean?
Play up front.
Did he? That might be why then. Yeah.
Happens to a lot of players actually. Actually, Cole used to play up front. I mean, because everyone wants to play up front when they're a kid. Well, if you're a good footballer, it shines through.
But what I think is, the top players at a certain age, like 10 years old, are always strikers. And then what happens as they get older, they get put into a position, don't they? Because you can imagine like Ashley Cole being a striker, for example.
John Terry was playing in midfield.
They would all be brilliant, because it's the standard.
Yeah, well, a man who's popped up not too far from East London of late is Harry Redknapp.
Definitely.
Do you feel like he's walked out?
Anyone who's interested in football to that extent and knows about Pompey and knows about Redknapp and has had experience of him as a manager will know obviously what it's like as a man. And I don't think anyone would seriously sort of think about sort of having a go at his sort of reputation on the pitch. I mean, he's a great manager, and there's no doubt about that. But he's an awful person. Is that not fair? What's happened is a lot of people have missed the point. I've seen a lot of press and a lot of people saying, why are the Portsmouth fans, and I'm only speaking as a Portsmouth fan, so I'm just giving the point of view, why are people complaining, why are the Portsmouth fans moaning, look at what he's done for the club? And they're completely missing the point.
Yeah, it's our world, this will be my last job, this is a job for life now, and it's the second time he's done it.
He made his own bed again and said that. He didn't have to say those things, you know. What he could have done is he could have said, look, I'm taking this job, and he could have had the last game at home to Fulham on the Sunday, had a press conference, done whatever he wanted to do. Thanks very much for everyone to accept me back into the fold. You know, like, I think I've offered you some good football. I've won you an FA Cup. It's been a great mutually beneficial relationship. You know, I've enjoyed my time here. I feel this is my last chance to be at a big club. I'm going to take it. And obviously you get it one or two, would be pissed off, and people would be a little bit disappointed. But there's no way that he would have got that sort of reaction.
You don't think he's maybe left thinking?
I mean, I text you boys. I'm pretty sure I got the news at like 10:30 on a Saturday night from a mate of mine.
You didn't reply kindly to when I said Walt Keegan for Pompey.
I said that as well, weirdly.
I think you both did, yeah. But the thing is, this is the point. I mean, he's not even picked up the phone to the club captain. Do you know what I mean? That's disgraceful stuff. Sylvain Distan came out before the Fulham game and said, I found out about this on Sky Sports News this morning.
Yeah, that's right.
The man's supposed to be going to work. It's a matter of basic professionalism at that level. You know, you've got to be doing that. And then the thing is, if you're going to be a more cynical way of looking at why he's gone, the money's...
Go on.
The money's drying up at Portsmouth. He's spent and spent and spent. He's achieved success, decent success for a club of Portsmouth size, but the money's run out. He's doing one. Tottenham have got a lot of wedge. You know, he's taken Portsmouth as far as he could, but he could have gone about it in a better way. Yeah. And
he could have gone about it in a better way.
There were
a couple of weeks ago, it would have been a lot more convenient if he hadn't slagged off Spurs fans for the whole soccer.
Absolutely.
The timing's just awful in just every imaginable way.
Well, I think you're right. And I think what we can say is Redknapp, good manager, possibly a great manager. Maybe he'll go down in history. I mean, his history will serve him well and he'll be looked back on as a great manager. And that's fair enough, you know. But certain things you can't buy, do you know what I mean? And when Jamie Redknapp compared his own father on national television to Sir Bobby Robson, that's an absolute disgrace.
Did he really?
Yeah. He said he's up there with Bobby Robson. Bobby Robson's a man of absolute class and dignity, and has won about 9 trophies.
Are you saying Barcelona and Bournemouth aren't in the same category?
Harry Redknapp has won 1 trophy, and we thank him for that, and fair play to him, it's a good trophy. But
you can't compare him to...
No, absolutely.
No, no, no.
Listen,
Jamie Redknapp.
But do you think Jamie Redknapp had an influence in going to Tottenham? Because maybe Harry sort of phoned him up and said, Jamie, I'm thinking about it, what do you think?
And
he went,
oh,
we said
love you. Yeah. One thing, Dad, is they are a top club.
I think it's good actually that Tony Adams
would
be given a job.
Yeah,
he deserves his chance.
Yeah, his last job. Obviously, a lot of people have criticised, almost laughed at him because he did so badly in his last job. But that's got a long time ago now. He's earned his stripes at Portsmouth, and I really do think he deserves a crack. And he needs to get a stylist or sack his stylist.
That's
another thing that's got to go.
That's got to stop. Something made me laugh. Someone said this on like a blog or something. I said, the thing with Tony Adams is, I think he's got the potential to be a good manager, but I can't get my head round the fact that he looks like the sort of man you'd expect to see when you come home, standing at the bottom of your garden with his trousers down. Because of the face in that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He does have a kind of like, he's very softly spoken, and the way sometimes he delivers, I think to myself, yeah, I could just see him rocking back and forth in a dark room.
One day exploding, having a proper falling down moment.
I think he deserves his chance. You know, he's turned himself around. He's been through a lot of hard times, and I'm not saying they haven't been brought on him by himself, but by his own self doing. But he's turned it around.
Well, I was worried for Portsmouth because I thought names like Kirbishley and Sam Allardyce,
Leary. Do you know what I mean?
To be fair though, those people aren't getting the jobs that are coming up. It's like the old boys' club does things.
Do you think the penny's finally dropped, do you?
Mate, I hope so. I mean, Peter Reid's in Thailand, so we don't know how long that will last. But You know, Peter Reid's managing the Thai national team.
You know that.
It's one of those things it's easy to forget because it's so ridiculous that you think, nah, I must have dreamt that. No, it was gold no. So actually, something I was going to say, sir, about Harry Redknapp is I think he's looked at this job and thought, if I'm going to have a realistic crack at the England job at the end of my career, Tottenham are a better club to be at because I can spend money to get them higher up the table.
Listen,
I reckon he will have... I reckon
do you think there's a chance for that, do you?
Well, you don't know with England, do you? I don't think Capello's going to be there for years and years and years and years. And it's just every time the job comes up, anything could happen. We've seen that. Steve bloody McLaren, Mike. Steve McLaren managed England.
That's what needs to be said. Steve McLaren managed England. Anything is possible.
Look. He was up to his old tricks the other day in an interview. He's given it the old Dutch one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's you should do that as like a motivational speech at school, like an assembly. You may think you don't like studying now, but anything is possible. Just show a picture of Steve McLaren like an England track.
Yeah, and then of Greece lifting the Euro 2004 trophy.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
David May sitting on top of the Man United flag.
Yeah. And Marcus with a bird in his arms.
We were saying Adams has not got much experience in managing and so on. Has Diego Armando Maradona?
No. Do you know what Carlos Tevez said? I'm looking forward to it. It is going to be funny.
Well, yeah, it won't be funny for him if he carries on warm on the Old Trafford bench. I'll tell you.
Maradona.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Do you know what it is?
That is in no way going to be an absolute disaster, is it?
No. Well, he's got Basile in who won the 86 World Cup.
Has sentiment got in the way there?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's managerial record breeds like 3 wins, 12 draws, and 8 losses. And he's managed 2 clubs briefly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they've got a big management team, though, haven't they? I think it is like... It's almost like Keegan being reappointed. It's just they want to appease the people and see how it goes.
But out there, I mean, he is...
But Jumbo, should they not have put him just in the coaching staff?
So I think he's more of a Listen, he's more of a figurehead, isn't he?
I'm happy to have Maradona... Yeah, man's a legend, and in Argentina he's massive. You don't want him doing a press conference, though, do you? That's the last place you want him.
Yeah.
Well, apart from a coke house, but you don't want him. You don't want him doing a press conference. That's the problem.
I meant to say
crack then, but then I realised in my head he was never actually on crack. It was just coke.
Yeah, had he not come out?
Well, I couldn't just say coke place.
Can you imagine what a coke house would be like?
In the 1950s, that would have been a very different thing.
Yeah, it would have done, yeah. But listen, he's an I mean, the Maradona factor will be massive.
Yeah, definitely.
But he's put on such a high pedestal. I mean, I'm sure people prayed to him.
He's got his own church, hasn't he?
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. It's just, like, it's something that we can't even begin to understand. That the absolute, you know, how he's heralded as I said, like a god. Do you know what I mean?
Have you read El Diego, his autobiography?
No.
Like some of the stuff in that,
it's unbelievable.
Some of the adulation he would get. There's actually been a film made about it.
There has been, yeah. Serbian.
About a guy who, a guy who finds a piece of wood.
That's right.
With Maradona's face on it. Yeah. Just like a natural. It looks like Maradona. So he treks across Argentina
to
show him.
Northern Argentina, which is quite a poor part of Argentina.
He goes all across to show him it, doesn't he?
That's right. Yeah. I've not seen it. But
it's supposed to be brilliant. I've not seen it either. But it's supposed to be brilliant. But yeah, in El Diego, his autobiography, which I recommend, by the way, it's my book of the week. And there are a lot. The reason I say that, there are a lot of books about him doing the rounds, but that's a really good one. It's got a blue cover, and he's doing the on his knee celebration and some of the stuff in there is crazy. It's crazy, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we can't understand the adulation there because we don't have a player that's universally regarded as the greatest ever.
Could you
imagine what that must be like?
Terry Butcher.
Well, before Jimmy Bullard, this obviously.
Yeah, but Terry Butcher was idolised for a very long time just for having a bit of a cut head. I hate Terry Butcher.
That's the different levels we operate on.
Yeah.
You know, this man wins a World Cup single-handed.
Yeah.
Apt use of words there.
The good thing about that also is that he won like Serie A with Napoli. They never win.
Well, that's right, yeah. It's such an unfashionable club as well. Yeah. What the hell is he going
to do? They're doing all right this season, but they never win it.
Yeah.
No. And we have like Terry Butcher. The thing that pissed me off about Terry Butcher is that he piped up the other day and said there was talk of...
He's such a rent...
What did he say the other day about a player? I forget who it is now.
What's going on about Beckham that time?
Really? Yeah, he also had a massive pop at Sven. But he had a pop at a player, a Rangers player, who's going to be naturalised Scottish.
And I was going to move on to this, Nacho Nova.
Yeah, and he said, we'll never pick him for Scotland. They've got to be genuinely Scottish. And it's like, you're fucking
What's that
English,
got to do
mate?
With him?
Yeah.
One, you're English, and you're fucking assistant manager of Scotland. It's an absolute disgrace.
Senna, the Brazilian Spaniard.
Yeah,
Marcus. He's all for it, funnily enough.
I bet Deco is as well.
I find yeah, even Kevin Peterson's giving support.
Owen Hargreaves and Greg Rosetsky are like,
yeah.
It's silliness.
There's talk
it's
of Manuel Almunia, or there was till the North London derby.
You can keep
him. There's talk of Mikel Arteta, isn't there? Naturalising himself.
And is that right?
Yeah, I would not be for it. I wouldn't like it. I can't imagine what Portuguese fans now think of Deco, that he's gone to Barcelona and he now plays for Chelsea. He is now, however long he was at Porto, he is now just a Brazilian playing in their team. It's just weird.
Yeah.
Well, Cameron Ace is another one. He never makes any bones about it. He was even saying stuff like, I can't bother to get the flight back to Argentina. Yeah. I just want to play for Italy.
Is it Qatar that just got in loads of Brazilians?
That's right.
And like, their national team's basically just Brazilian.
Who's a Brazilian in place for Japan?
Santos.
Yeah. There's a load of them in the J-League, but it happens a lot in athletics
John
as well.
Barnes.
It happened in the Olympics, didn't it, in the volleyball team. Yeah. And it was Georgia against Russia.
Yeah.
And the Georgians were both Brazilians. And one of the Russian volleyball players said...
This is beach volleyball, right?
Yeah, yeah. She said, we weren't playing Georgians today, we were playing Russians. The other one just like forgot all that and just said, Georgia should never have attacked Russia. We are much bigger than them.
Don't get involved. That happens a lot in athletics. What you'll get is like the UAE or whatever will find a Kenyan runner and they'll pay him so much money... And he'll keep the money, obviously, and give it to his family back home and stuff, and he'll run for them.
Yeah.
Well, of course it is. It's his to spend, Marcus. But it makes a mockery of it, do you know what
it
I mean?
It does, yeah.
I mean, the thing about Almunia...
It defeats the point of it.
I mean, but again...
Yeah, of course it does.
You get someone coming and saying, yeah, but the managers are done. You know, you've got...
Yeah, but that's not the same thing, man. It's different.
I personally don't think that's the same thing. On the fact is, it's kind of... That practice has been done for a while. And especially for say, developing nations or those who are... Not really in tune with football and trying to get in there. You've got to get people from the outside in.
Experience is important, isn't it?
You've got to get people from the outside in. Otherwise, they don't go anywhere. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say that the reason I don't want Almunia is England manager. England manager, I definitely don't. want
Hang on, but
Steve McLaren did it.
Yeah, it's true.
He could be number two.
The reason I don't want him is England goalkeeper. Did you see in the North London derby?
I did. Yeah. End of.
You are not just that. But one of the shots hit him in the face. He went to save it, put his hands in the way.
Yeah, was that Huddersfield?
He went for his hit him in the face.
Yeah,
and he couldn't save the follow up because he looked like he busted his nose or something.
He just looks as though he's not really that. A young Moroccan schoolboy.
Yeah. Oh, I heard about this, yeah. Have you heard of... This is awesome.
He's been jailed for insulting the king after replacing the monarch's name with that of his favourite football club. He altered the phrase. The phrase is meant to say, God, the nation, the king. But he, on the school blackboard, he changed it to God, the nation, Barcelona.
And didn't Barcelona agree to pay his legal
fees?
Well,
this is what I...
They're trying to, aren't they? They're looking into it, isn't it?
Is that Barcelona? Yeah, they've appointed a lawyer to look in and to help him. I think that is fair absolutely enough. Fantastic.
Do you think they put him up to it? And they're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. We're taking on the whole country. Wait, do you know... Back when I was a bit younger, I obviously didn't know as much as I know now about football. When we were 8 or 9, I used to prefer Real Madrid. I used to like their kit. I used to like the way they had. I mean, it sounds ironic now, but they used to have a tradition of bringing young players for their Real and all these sort of players.
When you
do a bit of research, you look into your Spanish football, look into your history. Barcelona have always been the real sort of...
You don't have to go...
Club of the people, absolutely.
No, well, Real, yeah, they are, aren't they, Barcelona? Really, and obviously Real Madrid, but they're sort of... You know, fascist connection, that sort of stuff.
Although Barcelona do have their sort of ultras element as well, but it's not nearly as bad. Like,
they didn't support General Franco, mate.
Yeah, yeah. There was a game, wasn't there? There was a game where Barcelona were made to lose it. They were threatened, and they lost it 6-0 because they were absolutely petrified.
But there was a real great match when they went away to the Bernabeu, and it was kind of when Barcelona were freed, if you like, from all that kind of crap, and they were really seen as this kind of, you know, freedom fighting side or whatever. And they went to the Bernabeu and they won. And it really kind of it shook up Spanish football quite a bit. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I went to watch Barcelona about a year ago now, and it's just you get a feel for a club, and it's a really, really good club. You know, they do a bit of community.
It's a lovely little club.
It's a lovely. Yeah. They're not that, and I refrain.
They're not just a football club though. Either they have like a basketball club and this that, and the other. Like it's a whole sporting institution.
Well, you were saying when you come back, you said it's the best game you've ever seen. You said the best football experience you've ever had.
It was marvellous. Absolutely marvellous. Luke, I believe we've had some emails.
Yeah, we have quite a few actually, but a lot of them are surrounding the same sort of thing. So I'm just going to read one of them out, and it's obviously about. Tottenham and stuff. During your next show, please can you ask Lukey Moore what his thoughts are on the losing the world's most loyal manager to his most hated team. My flatmate and I are keen to hear his thoughts from the lads at 79B. But a lot of other people, Big Dan B, Jimmy, a couple of other people have emailed in about that. So we've already sort of covered it a little bit, haven't we?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I know they all just want me to say, he's a fucking wanker. So there you go. He's a prick. There you go.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like Harry.
We broadcast a serve, right? Do it for the honour, not the glory. But yeah, one last email. This is from, I'm not sure if you remember, Taylor emailing about the Stockholm Derby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, he's been to another one.
Oh, brilliant.
He's been to another Stockholm Derby.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well,
I think the season that short, it's come back round.
Well, it's the final. He said it's the final Stockholm Derby of the season. It's Hammarby versus Djurgården. I think it's three or four teams at Stockholm.
Right.
He says, chaps, I normally paraphrase this, but I'll read this one in its entirety because it's a good one.
Okay.
A god-awful match with very little to offer in the way of football. However, there was enough 1980s era English football hooligan banter to keep even the most nostalgic Ruckmeister happy. A short rundown in the style of the Rambles piece on tabloid linguistics.
He's my favourite.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? They're all our favourites, mate.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's only two of them,
anyway. They're all winning.
At one point, another horror firework was thrown onto the pitch. He's written this in the style of the Sun. It's very good.
You wouldn't think the Swedes kick off, but they do.
At one point, another horror firework was thrown onto the pitch by the Djurgården fans, shockingly exploding just feet away from the keeper.
My giddy.
The fans then cleaned their own house by visiting violence on the thrower. Then the Hammarby scallywags set fire to the stadium. As unbelievable as it sounds in this day and age, in a peace-loving country like Sweden,
that's amazing,
which luckily wasn't able to horror burn for too long. Then incredibly, the Hammarby fans waded into the home fans section and a horror semi-riot was instigated until the security cleared them away. In respect of this, it seems the English game has been rather well tidied up after last weekend's coin-throwing pitch invasion. Does Ramble think there is much some pent-up frustration spewing forth from fans because we policed the game so harshly?
He sounds a bit disappointed that the English aren't.
Yeah.
It's like a caged tiger.
So a great email, but the overall point is everyone too, are all the authorities and the police too heavy-handed with fans these days? You know, these days you get kicked out for standing up. Is that a bit of pent-up frustration there? They need to sort of relax the laws a little bit and say, look, just enjoy yourselves. You know?
You've got to look at it in the context of it being Newcastle-Sunderland and Sunderland getting that first win, though. Like, that's obviously, it's still inexcusable, but it's not like it's just kicked off at, like, Villa, Bolton. Do you know what I mean?
No, you're right.
There's a context to it.
I think the other angle to look at it is, back in those days, I'm not defending it, but back in those days, there was hardly anyone there apart from sort of young working class men. You know, these days a lot of families, a lot of children, a lot of women.
Again, the fan base is vastly different to what it was.
A lot of posh twats. You know, so you got to account for these sort of people. They're not used to seeing violence, and nor should there be violence in the football ground. Of course not. But I mean, I understand what he's sort of saying. He's reminiscing about times when it was maybe a little less innocent, a little more exciting, which is fine. But I mean, you don't want fire and fireworks. I mean, I get away with that a lot on the continent, don't they? A lot of fireworks and flares and shit like that. But yeah, great email. But that sums up the emails for this week, chaps.
James, what have you got for us?
I have got a little tidbit about Jason Cundy. Right? Did you hear about this? I'll just read it straight out. Chelsea fans laid flowers at Stamford Bridge yesterday after a radio host joked that a former player had died. TalkSport's Andy Goldstein said ex-Blues defender Jason Cundy had passed away after he could not make the sports bar show on Saturday, and fans flooded the club with condolences. Cundy, 39, who survived cancer in 1997, said, "It was a silly joke by Andy that backfired. My wife got weird texts and someone even changed my Wikipedia page. I'm sorry if people got upset. The station last night apologised to Jason and Chelsea fans for inappropriate comments." Not for the first
Chelsea
time.
Chelsea fans, Andy Goldstein, recently. Jason Cundy.
I bet Andy Goldstein was pleased about Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross. That's taking the heat up. I love that. I love it because this has happened before. Famous people have been assumed to be dead.
Yeah.
And someone always thinks it's a good idea to joke that someone's dead.
Yeah.
That's not a joke.
That's really
Can I
jump in there and say that a friend of mine once got a text from a mutual friend saying, "Quick, turn on your television. Alex Ferguson's just died." And he went to turn it on and got another one straight back saying, "Carlsberg don't do text messages."
Oh dear,
we can't endorse that
banter.
Sort of thing. Branded banter, exactly. Awful. What's the world coming to? Jesus Christ.
Doesn't he do a show
He done a show with Gary Stevens. Did you see Gary Stevens?
Gary Stevens, Expos and Rangers.
Right, you know when they was talking about Redknapp getting the job, and he pipes up that he's going to he mentions in the press that he's going to get a couple of old Tottenham players in, right? And we all know that he's thinking about Tottenham players like Sherwood, who proves it, and Teddy Sheringham, those sort of players. That's what everyone thought about. But Gary Stevens, right, he wasn't perturbed. Gary Stevens, right? he turns up about 7:50 in the morning outside Tottenham's training ground.
Must have been
Monday morning, and
It's first come, first
serve. Well, my first reaction when I saw him, oh, Gary Stevens is outside the training ground. My first reaction was, God, it looks cold there, doesn't it? Isn't it going to do that? And he's there, and you can see his breath, and it's freezing, he's got a scarf on. And every time, and he's going, and Mike Wedderburn goes on Sky Sports News, he goes, Gary, what are you doing down at the top of the ground? Oh, well, you know, we're just seeing the players starting to turn up for training now, and Harry Redknapp's already coming in his car. And then Mike Wedderburn, I swear he makes like a conscious decision to sort of just really sort of indulge Gary Stevens. And it comes up on the little info bar, Gary Stevens, Tottenham Hotspur 1983 to 1990 or whatever it was. And Mike Wedderburn goes, oh, I hear Harry Redknapp's trying to get some and the first of all he goes, I hear Harry Redknapp's going to get some old ex-players in, can you shed any light on that? Oh, yeah, can you just do your fucking job, you know? We're paying you to do that. And he goes, and Gary Stevens' face like lights up. And he just goes, oh yeah, as you know, Mike, I spent 7 long good years at Tottenham Hotspur.
Without a hint of irony.
Yeah, won a few trophies, you know. And Mike goes, oh right, so you'll be putting yourself in the frame, will you? And he just goes, well, Mike, I've also got my UEFA A coaching licence.
Bloody hell.
And then Mike Wedderburn goes, Mike, are you going to go, what are you going to do then? He goes, well, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to knock on Harry Redknapp's door. And I'm going to say, can we have a little chat, Harry?
Well, was he going to bring the camera?
He's not joking. He's not doing an interview that he hasn't even been given on national television for a job that no one wants him for.
That's amazing.
Absolutely no shame. And we're used to pundits going on to shows just to get yourself in the shop window.
Yeah.
I'm looking for work. That was absolutely shameless. He should be disgusted with himself. Disgusted with himself. Yeah, I'll tune in to Talk Sport. His show's brilliant, I bet. I bet it's just like, well, I won this, and I won this, and I'll coach this. Absolutely disgraceful.
Also a qualified plasterer, if you need any work.
Exactly, yeah. It's like an extras when Stephen Merchant goes to Barry from EastEnders. I've got a job for you. Oh, have you got me a job? Yes, sir, come in. What is it? Light bulb in the toilet needs changing. I'll get on it. It'll do anything. Yeah, what's next, man? Right.
A football match between politicians and journalists was called off after Temple's boiled over. It has emerged. That was always going to happen,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Journalists.
Why has this even been put on?
That's every year, though, isn't it? That's every year, though, mate.
Is it?
Yeah, really? They do that every year. It's a charity thing. Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Match between lions and antelope ends in bloodbath.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Well, but it failed to, isn't it?
The match was stopped after 55 minutes following a number of contentious challenges between the MSPs and the sports journalists they were facing. BBC Scotland broadcaster Chick Young was taken out of the game by what he called an evil tackle.
Chick Young is a dick.
Yeah, what's anything about this bloke?
No, everyone, I do.
All the Scottish fans that were sort of commenting on the blog below this said that he was a nightmare of a bloke.
It was someone really, really hard who did it.
Well, so you reckon that someone's thought, right, I'm going to have a piece of that?
Yeah,
he's a
Chick Young, yeah.
So what, the game got called off for injuries or something?
MSP John Park was actually sent off because of this. Right, so
the game.
Amazing, isn't it?
Brilliant, isn't it?
The game took place at Lesser Hamden in Glasgow on Sunday. Labour's Ken McIntosh, one of the organisers of the MSP side, said both teams accepted the decision to call proceedings to a halt. Normally it's our football that embarrasses, not our behaviour, Mr McIntosh said. No. But in this case, it wasn't a terrific display. We're looking for a chance to redeem ourselves and show that we play football in the right spirit in the near future. It's like they've chucked something from a Joey Barton.
Yeah.
Like, it's press conference into the middle of this article.
Did they have a pint afterwards or something? I bet they had a pint afterwards
before, probably.
Yeah.
One of the flashpoints in the match saw Chick Young injured and stretchered off.
That's fantastic.
That was part of what got the game overheated, Mr McIntosh said. Mr Park, MSP for Mid Scotland and Fife, who carried out the contentious tackle, told BBC Scotland, I felt quite guilty a bit and I went and apologised to Chuck.
Yeah.
That's fantastic, by the way. That's a really good action.
But Chick said he had never experienced play like it in 20 years of charity football. He said, I'm beginning to mellow as the days go on, but if you saw my ankle, well, you'd be understanding why I'm reluctant to do so. So I'm beginning to mellow, but I'm fighting it. It sounds like an arse. The tackle was evil, in my opinion. The referee obviously clearly agreed. The MSP side, which also included, get this, Labour's Andy Kerr and Frank McCavity, and the SNP's Jamie Hepburn, was leading 6-2 when the match was abandoned. Surely he's the one you're going hard on.
Yeah.
You're 6-2 up, though, pal. You've got to be gutted about that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the result stands after 50 minutes, doesn't it? 75 minutes.
Oh, this is amazing. It is understood this came about after players from both sides squared up and started pushing each other in the chest. Brilliant.
It's class.
You've no idea how bad Scottish punditry is. Like, if you think that some of our guys are bad and we moan about the obvious ones, it's shocking. And you talk about boys' clubs and all, every Scottish pundit either supports Rangers or Celtic.
Oh, God, yeah. It must be unbearable.
Oh, it's terrible. Absolutely.
Well, listen,
terrible.
I think it shows that we've got to stamp out sort of violence and aggression shown by players because impressionable people pick up on it. And impressionable people such as politicians and journalists are going to just copy their heroes.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's a sad day for football. I think we can all agree on that.
Mm. Well, a bad day for politics, by the way.
Got one about Inter here. Italian champions Inter have been ordered to pay damages to a Napoli supporter who sued for existential damage caused by offensive chanting and banners displayed by Nerazzurri fans during a league match last October. Inter have been ordered to pay €1,500 to the fan who was chosen to remain anonymous after their supporters showed banners at the San Siro calling Naples the sewer of Italy. Mm. Other banners read "Ciao cholera sufferers" and "Neapolitans have got tuberculosis." I think these are things that probably aren't translating that well.
European insults are always rubbish.
Yeah. Terrorist insults are rubbish as well. Yeah. Like really, really bad. Like your mother is the son of a whore. Things like that.
Italian ones are
may
like
your wives think for themselves.
Yeah, your mother is a below average cook. That's like an Italian one. They say stuff like that. Yeah. I piss on the doorstep of your second cousin, that sort of shit.
So yeah, and that was in reference to a crisis in which the streets of southern Italy became basically deluged with like rotting refuse for months, just following a dispute involving Camorra run waste disposal service companies
and landfill sites
and governments. Yeah, it's Gomorra, isn't it? The film, which is actually about this. The fan's lawyer, Rafael Di Monda, said the chanting and the banners had left his client feeling indignant and deeply hurt. Inter, who won the game 2-1 thanks to two Julio Cruz strikes, had already been punished by the Italian League, which ordered the section of San Siro where the banners had been shown to be closed for the following home match, and the Milan club's defence argued that Naples court did not have the jurisdiction to make the judgment. However, the club must now pay compensation as a consequence of the behaviour of their supporters in addition to the Milan supporters' legal expenses. If you can win money for that, you can win money for anything. That is ridiculous.
So basically, he's complaining about something. He's suing and winning for something he's seen at a football match.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. You could get really upset that your team lose.
I'm not going
sure,
to
and then just
I might go get some money opposition. Back from fucking watching Pompey all through the 90s. That offended me.
You could get compensation for Harry Morton.
That moulded me into the man I am today, Marcus.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's player profile time, Jim.
Yes!
James is very excited.
Sorry, can you see that from here?
Yeah.
James gets excited when the fucking bin men turn up. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Well, he knows you.
Very nice. Good. Very good, mate.
We mentioned an Argentinian before, Diego Maradona. It's not him, though. It's a fellow Argentinian, and he goes by the name of Gabriel Omar Batistuta.
Oh, also, Batagol.
Born on February the 1st, 1969, the summer of love.
Sorry, he's only 39 now, he can still do a job.
Bolton, maybe?
He could do a job at Serie A.
AC Milan. Do we get him in for a couple of months?
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Maybe when Beckham finishes in March, he can carry on to the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Something like that. His first side he played for was Newell's Old Boys. A friend of mine, incidentally, when I was in Argentina, he got a pair of Newell's Old Boys shorts because he just liked to have his NOB.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That wasn't your friend, was it?
It was my friend.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely it was. He had 24 appearances, 7 goals.
Yeah.
He then went to River Plate, and that was obviously a big move there. Huge club in Argentina.
Yeah.
Huge club in South America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
huge club in the world, you might say.
Yeah, they are a big club. They're a massive club.
Yeah, they are, yeah. 21 appearances, 4 goals.
Yeah, he played 21 times for them.
Yeah, that's right. He was only there for a season. He kind of moved around a little bit. He then, from River, went to Boca.
Right, okay.
Which is
a big move. Big move.
To Celtic.
Yeah.
Tottenham to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Madrid to Barcelona. And so on.
Reading to Crystal Palace.
Yeah. It would be Brighton to Crystal Palace.
Well, not really.
You know, Farnborough to Aldershot, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Should we go on?
Yeah. Okay.
St. Petersport to Truro.
That's right. He had 30 appearances for Boca and 13 goals.
Okay.
So he's getting there. But in 91 was a big year for him. That's when he played for Argentina in the Copa America, and he finished a tournament with 6 goals, top scorer. Sorry. Yeah. And Argentina, they won that. And it was the vice president of Fiorentina at the time. He was very impressed with him, and he signed him. So that's when he went to Fiorentina.
Was that when they had the classic purple 7-up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shame because he could have done well there. It's a shame it didn't work out for him at Fiorentina.
The Fiorentina kit's quality, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a real distinguishable.
Yeah.
The following season, actually, Fiorentina were relegated to Serie B. He scored 13 goals that season, but they returned to Serie A 2 years later. He scored 16. They were managed by Claudio Ranieri, nonetheless. 93
what's their nickname? Is it the Viola?
That's right.
Yeah.
Good knowledge. In 93 second Copa America, they won that. 94.
Don't just brush over it. Oh yeah, they won that. Yeah. Mate, that's a big trophy. Come on, it's a big trophy.
Yeah, yeah.
They won that twice in a row. That's quality.
Yeah.
94, slightly disappointing World Cup, but he scored four goals in that World Cup.
Yeah, I can vaguely remember him in the World Cup, actually. Mm.
But 94-95 was it was a good season for him because he scored 26 goals. He was top scorer, and he broke Ezio Pascuti's 30-year-old record by scoring an all first 11 matches of the season.
Oh, wow, class.
How good is that?
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's good. And in 95-96 for Fiorentina, they won the Italian Cup and the Supercoppa. Fiorentina is 269 appearances, 168 goals.
I thought he played for more times than that.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's a great record.
That's decent. That is.
Yeah.
98 World Cup, he had a good showing, 5 goals.
Yeah.
Only got the quarterfinals. I say only because that Argentinian side again was just packed full of great players.
Yeah, yeah. Consistently,
always the way though, isn't it?
I can think of. Well, apart from World Cup 90, when it was pretty much just Burruchaga and Maradona, they had a bit of pretty poor side. Like, the keeper got injured quite early as well. But apart from that, I can't think of any time when they've not had a wonderful team. Especially 98, they had a great team as well.
2002,
when
they got
put
out in the first round.
Yeah.
2006 was
mental
as well.
Yeah, that's right,
2006, when they left Messi on the bench and tried to like just sit back on a 1-0 lead against Germany. Just suicide.
That's the and the Italians have lost because they will not learn.
That's 2002. Yeah. Nothing to do with this.
Problem. No, but I'm just saying. It's similar. That's what Italian. That's what Italy did.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's one of the best pieces of commentary ever. But anyway, carry on.
Anything Barry Davis
says. Yeah, he's had his profile. He's safely in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. That's safe.
Yeah, yeah. He played for Fiorentina for a good few years, but I think he wasn't going to win the title with them. They came close. They finished third 1 year, but he was after the Scudetto, let's be honest. And so in the year 1999-2000 season, he was offered a chance to go to Roma for, I think it was about £20 million.
Yeah, I thought that as well. Yeah,
what
was that in US dollars?
about 35 million.
Was it? Yeah,
In euros. You know, 29. Swiss francs, I'm not too sure about. he was slightly restricted with a knee injury for some of that, but he scored 20 goals in his first season for Roma, and he won the league with Roma for the first time in the club's
history. He deserved it.
That's brilliant.
1983.
He deserved it.
But this is quite good. In the next season, he changed his shirt number from 18 to 20 in reference to the number of goals he scored during the Scudetto winning campaign.
This became a bit full of himself, surely.
Again, the next.
Is it fair to say he started ruling out some sort of Marcus Speller type diva demands?
Do you think if he beat that record, he'd like notch it up with every game?
Obviously, he's drinking tap water. In 2002.
Council pop.
Yeah. He changed the number on his shirt again to 33, which was his age.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just on a whim, isn't it? It could be anything.
It's a bit weird. But his record for Roma, 63 appearances, 30 goals.
Yeah.
So, and again, I had a little bit of injuries there. But the following season after that, when he was 33, he was a bit out of form. So he was loaned out to Inter, 12 appearances, 2 goals.
It always happens in Italy, right?
Yeah.
You think that would never happen in England?
Yeah, it's mental. There seems to be no qualms of just going between all the big clubs. Yeah. Didn't Baggio play for Inter, AC Milan, Juventus?
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. But loan him out to one of your big rivals,
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Though.
Well, fair enough.
I'll tell you what, we'll give you one of our best players and we'll still beat you.
It's like you can't imagine sort of Man United saying to Arsenal, Tevez isn't really getting a game. Do you fancy him for 3 months? He's just winning there.
Yeah, they probably did do that, and then it turns out he's fucking Mikel Silvestre.
Who
simultaneously looks like a fish and a potato. How has he managed to work that in the same face?
I've been looking at that man's head and wondering what it is, and you've just. Thank you.
That's brilliant.
I'm glad I turned up.
You're right, mate. You're so right. You're so right.
Anyway, his last club was Al Arabi, which was in the Qatar League.
Hmm.
And. He had 22 appearances, scored 30 goals.
I'm really glad about that, because often you get these really good players who go to these small leagues and you say, what was there? No, they must have scored a hatful there. Oh, well, they played 50 games.
Didn't turn up.
Like 15 goals or something.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
He went there and he hammered them.
I've got a feeling he's got an unbelievable scoring record at international level.
He's got a very good scoring record.
It's about 50 and 60 or something, isn't it?
It's 78 appearances, 56 goals.
Yeah, brilliant.
That is, that's between 1991 and 2002. That's awesome. Decent. That really is a decent record. The best thing, I think, that he's achieved is to get a life-size bronze statue of him outside the Fiorentina Stadium. And under the statue it reads, "To Gabriel Batistuta, indomitable warrior, tenacious in his quest, and loyal of heart."
Ah, brilliant. That's emotional. Richly deserved.
Where does he go, James?
He goes into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
And he's going to stay there as well.
Possibly the only man who could follow Gerd Müller.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, no, in terms of how much I like him as a player, you know, I'm pleased you picked that.
Yeah.
Because
you
could have picked someone I don't care about, and you didn't, so.
Have we got an 11 yet?
Not yet. I was thinking about this.
Have you kept a record of it? It's all strikers and Barry Davies in goal.
Baresi.
You've got Baresi in the back. Nine strikers and Barry Davies in goal.
Did we do Maldini?
And they scored again because you will not learn to hear me say it.
And another one.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Perhaps we should put Pat Bonner in so we could just go,
Pat Bonner.
That just about wraps it up for this week. If you want to get in contact with us, the email address is footballramble@hotmail.com. We've a group on Facebook, and we have a myspace.com/footballramble. Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Bye.
We're all off to find Chip Young and kick his head in.